Blog Talk Radio.
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic at all. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see?
The man you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, y'all, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing along. Every voice and sing, till it in heaven rain, rain with the harmony. Oh, let it be. Let our rejoicing rise high. Loud as the orgia.
Forever, in the past.
Condemning anybody. I don't condemn people. And he didn't do that. I hope when he did the executive order, David talked about Harold's executive order he put in place and how many black people we began to get work. Well, you used to go to City Hall, saw black folks everywhere, downtown everywhere. It's almost like a ghost town, far and in between now. You find black folks working anywhere. And I also like to tell people about how Harold Washington gave blacks the first bonding. Black folks weren't even getting bonding from the city, and I doubt if they're getting that much now. Harold, like Dr. King, did so much for black people. But Harold also opened up government. The government wasn't just for blacks were the only ones shut out of government. Other whites were shut out of government. It was a closed group of people that was running government. It was inside government and had everything. And Harold came in, and he opened it up, and one of the first things he did was signed an executive order. He ought when he got his control, but he also had these ministers give up these badges because Daley had them on the plantation by letting them all have these little badges and part-time jobs, sheriff jobs. And there's a lot of things Harold did. So let's talk about that. A lot of folks talk about the primary. Look, a lot of our people in our community do not support Harold in the primary because some of them were scared and others believe he could win. And I don't think they really understood how many black folks was in this city until the vote came, because they had always undercounted us. And after that, that's why they really tore down public housing across the city, because of black political empowerment. Not just here in the city of Chicago, but across this country, they began. And the black community did not know, the same way they don't know what's going on now with the schools and everything. The black community was hollering, tear it down, tear it down, tear it down. No compassion, without understanding. They took sound bites, and they began to tear down. They didn't see the beginning of deferred maintenance, how the maintenance stopped on the building, how the when they gave standards, and we were hollering for standards. They need to put standards. They need to deal with the deferred maintenance, and they need to deal with some other things. Also, the black child or poor child have a right to live, too. But we allowed them. When I was driving down State Street the other day, and I looked and I said, my God, I mean, look at all this land. I drove down in the Second Ward, too, and looked at Ida B. Wells, and I was looking at some of the other stuff on the west side. And I looked at all these displaced black people, even though they moved around, but they empowered me, because what happened? That sleeping giant woke up one day and elected a black mayor. So there's always a long-range look and a long-range plan for others. You know, they look beyond the sound bites and beyond what is today. An example, these young men outside of Springfield the other day killed up all these people. This was a white young man. He already talking about he was just a little upset because of he had lost his job. There's always some psychological excuses. And I monitored all the talk radios to see whether or not the white radios was talking about the whole white race because of what these young men did. Nope. They moved on. They took the sound bite that he was out, frustrated about a job, and they moved on there with their agenda. That's what they did. Other communities who have things happen to them. But what we do is we just hamper day in and day out, and that's all you hear. It's like embedded on the brain that's what our community is. Our community is more than just shooting or killing, and we're not the only one that do that. Anybody does it is bad. we're in some kind of violent situation here in this country, in the world, and it's not just affecting the black community. It's affecting a lot of different people. But we, because we don't have ideas or don't want to bite the bullet and stand up and fight, I call it, just like you have drive-by shooting, a black-on-black crime, it's more than black-on-black physical crime. We have black-on-black physical, economic, and political crime. Those are just as bad. They're just as bad when you deal with all of those things. So we need to just talk about, well, Harold, when Harold was there, Harold gave the community, the first time in the history of Chicago, that black people felt that they had to answer to the black, elected officials had to answer to the black people. They had to. They was afraid to do things against black people. But now they do anything they want to do. And they don't even worry about you. And everybody else do anything. I mean, black folks, you know, we don't have to, even economically, we don't, let me put it like this. It is economically for some people to maintain the hollering every day about shooting and killing because they get money from it. Poverty, they make money from it. And everybody make money off of us. And right now, the whole thing about the schools are being lost. We don't forget it. May they supposed to make a decision. It's interesting that we had a school crisis during the Harold Washington days, if y'all recall, and we're going to talk about that when we come back so you can understand what we what happened and how we got this movement going. We're going to talk about the movement, the man, the moment. And the moment is when we elected him. The movement is what began to move before we even selected a candidate. And the man was Harold Washington. So if you want to talk about that or talk about something else, what's going on in your city, let us know. But Barbara Bird Bennett didn't know what she was running up against. I told her to take her sugar pill on back where she came from. I heard someone, I think it was on one of the talk shows. It might have been on, I don't know whether it was on Cliff or Perry, one of those shows. Someone called in from Cleveland. Cincinnati, somebody, they had a black mayor. It was Cliff's show. A black mayor, black council, and how they couldn't get contracts. That's what I mean by black-on-black political crime. And then the economic crime is when black folks make money based off the fact that they are black, and then they don't even hire no black folks. I know one black man right now hollering about he's not getting a contract. You go to his factory, and you don't see no black folks working. So what you have is, give it to me because I'm black, but I'm not going to hire no black people. Or you make your living, okay, if you're a movie producer, and you write about our culture, make your living based off of black folks, then you don't feel a need to hire black folks to come back and rebuild. I did an interview on Legacy yesterday. I did a taping with Jose Sanders, and we were just talking about the legacy, and I was telling about the economic drive-by, just so far as I'm concerned, and he was asking what was wrong with the community. And I told him, it's not the masses' fault. Don't nobody call and tell me, we need to be spending our money with our own. You ain't got no own. We have to build our own. And when we're building our own, they knock us away. But when you look at people, like Oprah, any of these folks make money, any black folks, money with a purpose, they should come back and rebuild these communities. If they rebuild these communities will be different. Detroit made a lot of millionaires. There was no reason for Detroit to be like it is. That's why I told you, I saw Barry Gordy riding out. I'm glad they pulled that commercial because it really looked bad. Riding out of Detroit, but Detroit is back in his car, and they're Detroit already. You know, Detroit already been taken over. Then just got wiped out. In all our communities, we got empty and we got drained. Black economic with a purpose. Harold had politics with a purpose. What is your purpose? What are you supposed to do? I told you there's an economics about people keeping people in poverty. With this shooting, you got to keep talking about shooting every day because there's a whole group of folks getting this money. We need to look at who's getting the contracts, who's getting this money. There's sad folks on the corner talking about watching the kids go to school. That's just, our community don't want to have that. It looks, and then you don't know who's out there because you can go buy them flapjackets anywhere. It could be some anybody snatching up these kids. So that's money there. Who's getting this? So you got to get paid to stand on the corner. Black men, get your butt up and go stand on the corners. Stop peeping out of the curtains. When my kids was in school, we just got out there and started moving. It's all about is an economic to keep black folks poor and everybody else get rich off of us, not by us spending with them, but based off the fact that we're poor. So Harold Washington did a lot. David Orr article was Here's Harold, Trailblazing Mayor. And if you didn't get the article while you wait, you can look online. And it was Wednesday where he talked about what Harold really was. So we're going to be celebrating Harold Washington and talking about anything you want to do. And if you're in other parts of the city or the country or the world, if you remember Harold and what Harold, what effect Harold had on you, please call us and let us know, too. You listen to Talk of Chicago, 69 WVON. Our number is 773-591-1690. We're streaming live, www.wvon.com. And guess what, y'all, all over the world and all over the nation and all over the city, we are also on iHeartRadio. We're on Twitter. We are also on Blog Talk Radio. Look for Dorothy Tillman, y'all, if you want to find me on Blog Talk to get this, or you want to, after you read it, want to go on my group Facebook and give me some comments that you might have. Give it to me. Let's talk about it, and we'll do that. And we're also on Black Planet group Facebook and Facebook. So I got some coffee this morning, y'all. Thank you to Ebony. Last week, her father brought me some over here. Thank you, Jimmy Tillman. We listen to talk. So get your coffee, get your tea. Come on back and talk to me at 773-591-1690. I'll be back in 2 minutes. Thank you.
The Talk of Chicago.
Hi, this is Cornel West.
And I'm Tavis Smart. Another issue I want to address is, are Caucasians now going to be profiled? I mean, it's fascinating. Now that we have white perpetrators in the Boston Marathon bombing, their whiteness has become completely irrelevant. White is never used in describing the suspects. It was not addressed in any of the press conferences I saw that we have. We have a manhunt for a white individual. I didn't hear it. I think maybe there was one instance where one official mentioned it, right? I mean, white American Muslim bombers. Nobody ever thought about this possibility. Natan, nobody even considered this could be a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any mystery as to what's going on. I mean, it's the people of color are considered an other. They're labeled as such. That's how people talk about them. The sort of default.
Now, it's playing now. I'm listening.
For one discount. Purchase tickets online.
Another issue I want to address is, are Caucasians now going to be pro?
Yeah, we have a little technical difficulties right now going back and forth with commercials. As you can see.
Instagram, you name it.
I was trying to play the commercial because we played the Harold Washington.
Just text social to 88. The rate supply. You're listening to Coffee, Tea, and Dorothy Tillman. That is on the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WBON.
Say it real loud, y'all. I'm black and I'm proud. I'm black and I'm proud. We're back, y'all. We're back now. We're back. Harold said to love black folks don't mean that I hate anybody else. But hell, say you got to love yourself. That's what he said. You can't love nobody if you don't love yourself. I told you I'm going to have David Orr on in my 7 o'clock hour. And I want you all, because he wrote a wonderful article in Wednesday's Sun-Times. I'm going to take 1 second and try to read some of it. Here's Harold Trailblazing Mayor. Next Monday will mark 30 years since Harold Washington was sworn in as an African-American mayor of Chicago. Unfortunately, time can erode the details of any historical figure reputation in just a few seasons. Today's generation of young Chicagoans may know Harold as a library builder, the community college with his famous smile, but not the trailblazing way that he was. And this is what he said. Harold Washington was fairness. He committed to equality not only for the African-American Hispanic voters whom he galvanized with his candidacy for him. Fairness meant equalizing city services for all the neighborhoods. This was not a modest goal. It was revolutionary. And David is absolutely right, because we didn't even, our neighborhoods, we didn't get grass cut or no, nothing else. And David talked about the lady who saw somebody doing tearing up the alley, and she got nervous and didn't know what the machine was. But I remember people were saying when they was bringing the grass cutters down, what are those things? What are those things? And we said, they're grass cutters. I don't know who's on line two yet. Somebody's on that other line. I got to find it. And the grass cutters. But Harold, he was talking about Harold Chang and how he did the whole cleanup, how he was involved in making sure that he did executive order for fairness, a lot of other things. So we're going to talk about Harold Washington today, because you know I was very much the man, the moment, the movement. being a part of that movement that really pushed Harold Washington into office. We had a movement that was where we were dealing with Jane Byrne. You know, those of us elected and worked hard to elect Jane Byrne as mayor of this city. And when Harold Washington, when Jane Byrne got in, everything she promised, the evil cabal, she joined the evil cabal. And she totally disrespected the black community. She with the CHA, we kicked her butt. Marion Sampson, all of us, we weren't playing about that. Also, with the school board removing Michael Scott and putting the Bogan Brothers in there, and the black community was totally getting disrespected. The Mollison parents was, we did a lawsuit against Mollison Factories of Failure for Continuous Progress, and then we organized the parent equalizers after that, and then we went after them for mastery learning. And after the mastery learning, we began to really fight the whole school question. And it's ironic because we're in a big fight right now for the school question. And then we had a fight about the CHA. We had all of the things that really began to move. We changed Streeter. Streeter beat a Harold Wood defeater. Streeter used to be a machine man. But we went down there. I remember Mary, Marion Staff and I went down there. We surrounded Streeter. We told him, no, you're coming off this plantation today, brother. We're not taking this anymore. And it was in the education committee. We were dealing with education. We had Thomas Ayers, who was trying to be chairman of the Board of Education. And one of the things that said you had to live in the city of Chicago. I don't know whether they changed that rule. And Leon Finney came and testified at the board, at the education committee, saying that Thomas Ayers did live in the city of Chicago. And we said he did not live in the city of Chicago. Leon Finney said he did because he ate barbecue with him at his house. And Al Sampson read in a magazine, a sports magazine, brought before the committee to show that he had stated he lived in Glen Eyre. So we was able to knock him off. We got Streeter. We stayed on top of Streeter, changed his mind, and Jane Byrne sent thousands of people out there, money out there, and a whole lot of people out there to try to defeat Streeter, but with Georgia Palmer and Lou Palmer. And they came up with the slogan, Streeter beat a Harold Wood defeater, and we went out there and we defeated Jane Byrne with Streeter. And Harold began to put a litmus test together to say, if you want his support, do you support the concept of a black mayor in 83? Now, you know, we skipped over the whole fact that Metcalf, who we never talk about, a great congressman, and we're going to talk about all of that one day, about all of our great people, Cornel Davis, Metcalf, Partee, and all of them. But when Jane Byrne appointed Stewart, we wanted someone else. So, of course, you know, Harold went from the Senate to the Congress, and he held both seats in the Senate and in the Congress. He said he wasn't going to give up, but he kept both. He was keeping both of them. We had this big fight at Partee's, was the committeeman in the 20th Ward, and we replaced Harold in the Senate seat. And Harold went on and back and forth. Harold was fighting Reagan. And that was, we was in a really hard time during that time. So this whole movement was going, and we all was. And I was going to jail every day. And this is before we even, I mean, it was like every day we took the Defender from a once-a-week paper to a daily paper. Defender was only coming out once a week then. And their slogan was the largest pictorial picture paper in the nation. But because of all of the news that was being carried on with the Sun-Times and the Trib, the Daily News, and the newspaper, and the television radio, and, of course, black radio, and VAZ, V103 over there, that was still owned by black folks, they was the Defender had to then go into a daily newspaper. And that's when I first met, Chinta. And Dunn, I can't think of his name in a minute. So Chinta was there, but Chinta was doing a marathon writing. And she wrote, that's how she got to be such a heavy writer and doing all this writing, all these articles in the Defender. And she really was almost like a one-person paper. So she was writing those articles, and people began to move, and she followed us around as we moved. And this movement was galvanizing. I remember we went to jail out of the CHA. We went down there and told CHA board meeting up. It was funny that day. Not really funny. And Lou Palmer and all of us went to jail. They drug us out of there. And I think that's the day Jesse said he was on the talk show, and they told him to boycott the fest. It was a different kind of thing there then, how we had all of this. So there were a movement going on. The Chicago Black United Community was organizing. They were They were organizing to we put together, we had all of these groups, and I'm going to come to the phone in a minute, just trying to give you a heads up on what happened in that movement. It's the movement, the moment, the man. So we began to organize. Nancy Jefferson, Slim, all of us, we organized. We came up with people organized for equal and welfare, full employment, welfare rights, and we put together power. When we got this whole voter registration thing going on, we forced them to let us become deputy registrars. But we put together Black United, Chicago Black United Community as a founding member, along with Conrad and Samson, Lou Palm, a bunch of us. And then we came up with BIPO. But we began to move and we began to educate people politically. So it's just kind of a thing. So just want to let you know, and I'm going to come back and forth about the man, the moment, and the movement. And I'm come back to when Mr. Gardner came in. Okay. All right. Maceo, how you doing?
Good morning, Alderman Tim Maceo. First of all, good morning to your listeners. And in reference to the great Harold Lee Washington, born on April 15th in 1922, it seems to me, well, his political acumen, his understanding was fashioned when he came out of the Army and attended Roosevelt College at that time and became ultimately president of the Student Council, fighting against restricted covenants, and then further under Alderman Ralph Metcalf in the Third War between 1951 and 1965, when he formed a separate political organization, the Young.
Hurry up now. Come
okay,
on. My board is lit up. I got 15.
Oh, sorry. Okay. And then, you know, ultimately the League of Negro Voters in 1960.
Are you going to come out on Monday?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
I certainly will. I certainly will. And I'll probably buy a ticket for somebody else, too.
Yeah, it was two, but and know that the ticket's up. It's people thought, Harold, well, we are sponsoring it. We're not sponsoring it, but we're part of it. It's sponsored. It's a committee, which is really great, the Harold Washington Tribute Committee. And I think the Black United Fund is their not-for-profit conduit that they're working with.
Can you get the ticket today?
I don't know. I don't know whether you can get tickets. You can walk up and get the tickets. I don't know. You can go online. The Harold Washington Tribute Committee and see.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so I don't know what you can get. If anybody's listening, you let me know where they can get tickets from today. I don't know. They're not going to have anybody. They should have had somebody at the box office today. They didn't ask to be there. But I know you can get tickets when you walk up. So I don't know, Maceo. Somebody might call, so you keep listening, and I'll know. I know you can call the Black United Fund, too, because they are the fiscal agent for this group. So they might know.
I see. But what personally struck me about Mayor Harold Washington is when I was living in Hyde Park, and he was a congressman at this time. And there was a little store on 53rd Street, and that's when I first saw him. But his warmth, his genuine, sincere love for people, you know, all by himself, congressman, no bodyguards, nothing like that.
State rep, all that. He was a state rep, a senator in the car. Harold was really great. Look, my board is lit up.
Okay.
It's 15 minutes,
you know,
so I want to get, and I got Vince want to give a report on Mr. Gardner, which he's
sure.
going to be very brief, and I'm going to get him too, so I want to just at least get through this board before I go on break.
Okay. And homage to Ella Fitzgerald, whose birthday was Thursday, and Ma Rainey, whose birthday was yesterday.
Okay. Thanks, Maceo.
Thank you. Have a great week. Love you.
You love you, too.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, how you doing, Vince? Hello? Vince?
Vince? He's not there?
Yes.
Yes,
can
sir.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Got you 2 minutes to give you an announcement because I got to get back to what I'm doing.
Let me just say, Alderman.
And I know your father, Vince Gilbert, was very, very, very involved with Harold Washington.
Yes, when he ran in 1979, people don't remember, my dad, Herman Gilbert, was a speechwriter, and Gus Savage was his campaign manager.
Oh, yeah, well, I hope Gus come in for, I think they're trying to work on getting Gus to come in for Monday. If you can help us with that, it'll be good. And
oh, without a doubt.
Call me later, Vince, because we're going to put a list of people who are going on. Who was part of Harold Washington. I'm going to try to put a memorial board to run down the screen with the people who was part of him who passed on. So talk to me later about that, okay?
Oh, that would be fantastic. Well, you know, I'm part of the committee, along with my sister, Sugar, we're part of the committee.
Okay.
But let me just say, Alderman, I talked to Mr. Gardner last night, And he directed me to call Melody Spann Cooper, which I did. Of course, she's in Vegas.
Well, you know, I let you on tip, folks. That's not good for you to tell that. That's not.
But
I'm saying, you know, whoever she is not necessary.
No,
but
this is a story that I would be talking to you and making this announcement.
Yeah.
Mr. Gardner is calling on all of Chicago to join him Tuesday, April 30th. In a boycott of Menards. WVON will be Information Central. Mr. Gardner is purchasing commercial time, and we're going to take back and make sure that our communities, when people say, what can they do? The Gardner Initiative is going to give you something to do.
So you're saying Mr. Gardner is asking people on Tuesday not to purchase anything from Menard?
He's asking them at 11 o'clock a.m. to join him at 93rd and Western, and we will officially kick off a boycott of Menards. The whole situation over there at 93rd and Western, you marched, is a tale of the good, the bad, and the ugly. Michaels and Ross Kloss and Sterling Bay are the good. 10 black contractors in the last 7 months have been able to receive $1.7 million in contracts that have related to 80 jobs for black folks. So we have victories there. But Menards, from day one, refused to sit down with Mr. Gardner. They refused to sit down with the mayor of Evergreen Park, Sexton. And so even though we've had black contractors that have success at Michaels and Ross Kloss, we want to start to show corporate America and any entity that we will go back to the street, and if you don't want us to build it, we won't shop there.
Okay. All right. So you're saying that Mr. Gardner wants people to join him at 95th and
93rd
and Western at 11 o'clock on Tuesday.
On Tuesday, April 30th.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Gilbert.
Thank you, Dorothy Tillman. And you know what?
I'll see you on Monday.
I know you're
bringing your mother.
Oh, no, she'll be there.
Okay.
You know we'll be there.
I'll see you and your mother.
Okay, Alderman. Thank you.
Thank you, Vince.
They're announcing it because Mr. Gardner's doing commercials. They'll be running all next week for the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay. Mr. Gardner was part of that movement with Harold, so he's going to be speaking Monday night. Thank you. Yeah, Mr. Gardner will be speaking Monday. And that's another. Let me go back to the phone because I want to at least. Dee, how you doing?
Sister Dorothy?
Yes.
Yes, God is still on the throne.
He's on the throne. I'm real. Thank you for holding for so long.
Yes, how are you this morning?
I'm fine.
Okay, I'm going to be brief. I never hear people mention how Harold enjoined himself with those boys that stand on the corner. When he was mayor, those boys that would be arrested, they used to take them home. And when they took them home, and if there was no parent available, there was gates put on the door and locks. And before you can get in your own home, you had to come and see about your son and see what your son was doing and why and so forth. And
well, I don't know about Harold locking the gates, but I do know that when Harold was in, crime went down. When Harold got in office, before Harold, the people talking about the shooting, you'd be sitting in your house and bullets come through the window. When Harold got in, the community got so involved, because I know about 300 of them that I mentored in that went on.
Yes, but the only thing is they never catch the shooter, and that all disturbs me. And one other thing that disturbs me is we're getting a lot of black television talk show hosts. And they there for a second for black, and then when you look around, it's all white. They're communicating white information, things that, you know.
That's the way it is, D. That's why we got to stand up, because right now they're trying to wipe us all out, and people like you and all the others out there, we got to hold our hand together and make sure that we don't get lost.
Absolutely, and I'm going to try my best Monday. You mentioned some names I hadn't heard in years. Thank you so much for being so informative.
Thank you, D.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Eddie, how you doing?
Good morning, Dorothy. How are you?
I'm fine.
Great, sister. It's nice to hear your voice.
Yours, too.
You're always a champion. You know how much I love you.
Uh-huh.
And Marion Stamps.
Oh, yeah.
And Dorita Washington and all of them. And I remember standing in line with you and Lou Palmer outside City Hall when you were fighting against Janice and, what was it, Bono?
The Bogan Brawl.
Yeah. And also, remember the nemesis, Winston Moore?
That's that day we went in and they threw us to jail. You know, you always told me, you said, sister, I was always there. You just didn't notice me. Remember, you used to always tell me that.
Exactly.
You said, I was there. I said, Eddie, you said, no, I was there with Lou, but you just didn't notice me until later
see,
on.
my job was to protect Lou Palmer and get him back and forth safe. My job, I was not in my role as an activist at that time.
Well, you protected him to the end. You took care of him to the end.
I was security for Lou Palmer.
Okay.
But let me also say that, and also one pivotal event took place on August 15th, 1981, Malcolm X College, toward a black mayor. When Lou Palmer couldn't finish his speech, he became so overwhelmed, and Jesse Jackson took the mic and finished it for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then July 10th, 1982, 4 p.m., Bethel AME Church, the plebiscite. And I have given to the Harold Washington Committee the actual plebiscite document. And
well, I told them to get it there. We're going to turn it so we can – I hope that I told Joseph to get it to us so we can turn it where we can – show it for the big, for the overall public, put it on it.
All the names on that document. Most people don't realize, sister, that Danny Davis, Congressman Danny Davis, came in second behind Harold Washington on the plebiscite document.
Yeah, you know, I tell folks we could have elected Mickey Mouse that year.
Exactly.
And only because black folks was conscious.
Yeah.
See, when you're conscious, you can determine who you're going to elect. And we had made this community so conscious by showing them we were willing to die, go to jail for them, and stand firm.
Exactly.
If the masses see you standing for them, they will stand with you. They're just tired of getting shafted.
And when they, very quickly, because I know you always have a lot of calls.
And it's lit up. That's all right. I had to,
Yeah. And the Chicago Fest, Soldier Field, when Stevie Wonder and others pulled back, and also the morning on WBMX when Jesse Jackson was on and a caller
Derek Hill.
And say, y'all shouldn't go down there and spend your money. Derek Hill, WBMX radio on Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of history. The movement is alive. I'm lifting my voice this morning in support of Ed Gardner.
Seabuck
and Bippo is alive. We just don't play in the media nowadays, but we're alive and well. I'm asking everybody to join Seabuck Bippo and all of Black Chicago, you and others, to come out.
Well, let's
out
tell them what Bippo stands for, Black Independent
Black
Political.
Black Independent Political Organization.
And we really need some independence. Folks don't want to see. We don't have no progressive independent, nothing no more, because everybody's on the payroll. And look, I'm telling you, Ed, everybody's on the payroll, somebody's payroll,
right,
and they can't stand up and be independent. And when you try to be independent, they get out there and organize you, confuse chaos, and take you in another direction. I'm telling you.
Seabuck was founded in May of 1980. Bippo was founded in 1984.
And I was a founding member of both of them.
Absolutely. In the front row. You were in, hey, Dorothy, you were in the front row when I got there.
Yeah, you know, but you know what you keep saying about the what happened with the reason we all went to jail that day.
Yeah.
And that's what happened when Lou Palmer had gone to jail. And they saw us. I think Mary and I, they was dragging us. We went and took the mic. They threw us out and folks
saw
us getting drug off to jail, and that's when somebody called in and say you need to boycott.
I was there when you were lined up outside the chamber to get into the chamber.
Yeah, so yes, that people need to understand, stand firm, the people that stand with you. Eddie, I'll see you Monday.
I'll see you Monday at 11 o'clock at 93rd and Western. We need to
Tuesday.
Shop at Menards.
Tuesday, 91st and Western at 11 o'clock on the 30th. Monday is Harold Washington.
Yeah. Tuesday. My bad. My turn.
Okay,
Tuesday.
But Monday is Harold Washington.
Oh. 11 o'clock.
Okay, thanks, Eddie.
All right, baby.
Thank you so much. Zakiya?
Good morning, Alderman.
Uh-huh.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, I started with the Come Alive October 5. Well, I started with the boycott of Chicago Fest, and that was a wonderful historical time, marching with Alderman Ed Smith and his two little girls at that time, and other people, some that have gone on. But in the movement with the Come Alive October 5 up under Mr. Ed Gardner was so historical because it was in my neighborhood on 47 and King Drive, and we registered people out of the office. I registered people in the alley, on the street, in the tavern, anywhere I could find them, and it was a successful movement. Not only that, I made a lot of friends. That's where I met Ivory Montgomery, who ran the office, and Dr. Whirl and Oscar. And more important, the brother that ran the grassroots movement in the bowels of the community was Attorney Michael Wayne Smith. Anytime Joe Gardner wanted some workers, Attorney Michael Wayne Smith would find them.
Yo, Michael Smith is one of those people we're going to mention on Monday. Well, I got him on my list to mention because Michael was really gift for a long time. He comes up out of that movement.
That's right. And yeah. I worked along with him because at 3 o'clock in the morning, we'd be out hanging Hal Washington Post.
Oh, yeah, it was deep. We're going to talk on the other end of it.
On top of Jane Byrne posters, 3 in the morning.
Well, we're going to talk about that work, Zakiya, on the other side. Folks don't understand you got to work. She's waving me that I got to go. You listen to the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. My number is 773-591-1690. We're streaming live at www.wvon.com. When we come back, we're going to continue this call, talk about Harold Washington. We're also going to have David Orr on the other side. 10 seconds. Tell me, Zakiya. Zakiya? Okay, she's gone. I was going to put that in. So we're dealing with that. So if you can get a chance to read David Orr, I was giving her 10 more seconds, but she was gone. We read David Orr article in the paper that was in the Sun-Times on Wednesday about Harold, and we're going to continue the man and the movement. And what do you think we need to be doing? Black political empowerment. Why were we so strong then and we made these people be responsible to us? Don't let nobody tell you that we cannot elect someone. We can. They said, oh, blacks ain't electing. We're electing everybody. Everybody's elected by us, including the mayor and the governor and everybody. But what happens is people get in, they forget we elected them because we have those who go behind the door, take money, and then they have confused chaos. Fairness is what it's all about. Get your coffee, get your tea. Is it time for me to go? Get your coffee, get your tea, and come on back and talk to me. I'll be right back.
The Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
Another issue I want to address is, are Caucasians now going to be profiled? I mean, it's fascinating. Now that we have white perpetrators in the Boston Marathon bombing, their whiteness has become completely irrelevant. White is never used in describing the suspects. It was not addressed in any of the press conferences I saw that we have. We have a manhunt for a white individual. I didn't hear it. I think maybe there was one instance where one official mentioned it, right? I mean, white American Muslim bombers. Nobody ever thought about this possibility. Natan, nobody even considered this could be a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any mystery as to what's going on. I mean, it's the people of color are considered an other. They're labeled as such. That's how people talk about them. The sort of default standard, whether it's explicit or implicit, is that you're white and probably that you're Christian. So this is like the standard. We all know this. That's why it's reported as such.
Sikh American activist and filmmaker Valerie Kaur pointed out another example of the double standard, which actually David Sirota described quite a bit. He said, let's remember that the Oak Creek mass shooting was actually the last incident of domestic terrorism in this country. It was committed by a white supremacist who walked into a Sikh house of worship. We did not hear calls for white people to be profiled. We did not hear Christianity denigrated or Christians living in fear. The way that our country diagnoses a problem when it's a white perpetrator is that it's an individual problem. I think this is an interesting thing. I mean, there are so many other pressing issues with this case, and they're being discussed, but I think it's interesting to talk about. We have two white perpetrators here, and all of a sudden their whiteness is just not a factor.
Well, it's easy to profile a minority, right? Because there's fewer of them.
Sure.
They're the ones who stick out in a crowd. So how do you profile white people? I mean, it seems like such a huge undertaking that it wouldn't even be worth the effort on any front. Of course, I'm not saying that profiling people of other races is worth the effort, obviously.
No, but just in the context of how this has been carried out.
Right.
The other thing that's interesting is that we're also talking about them in the context of immigrants, right? And I find it interesting because one an American citizen, one close to being an American citizen. How far after you've come into this country is the fact that you came from another country a factor? I mean, let's think about me, right? I came to this country when I was 5. I became a citizen when I was 17. If I now committed an act of terror, what would be pointed at, right? What would be pointed at? Would it be, listen, this is a guy who came into this country. Clearly, our immigration system did not work well because we didn't identify him. We didn't stop him. This guy was running around our country, and then he committed this act of terror. That's another framing, I think, that is interesting, which is because these guys aren't from the U.S. And how far does that work? I don't know. I'm asking the question.
Well, we know how the corporate media works, right?
We do.
They would say, yes, this is clearly something that needs to be looked at. They'd say, well, let's look at the parents. Let's look at the grandparents.
Right.
Yeah.
The present has brought us facing the rising sun of new safety eager. Let us march on till victory is won. Don't need the road. Try
difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind.
I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. I don't mind. I don't mind. I've been to the mountaintop every Saturday. I want you to understand when Dr. King said, I've been to the mountaintop and I don't mind. He said, I've looked over and I've seen the promised land. When Dr. King said that, Dr. King and his naiveness working with him, everybody think it was some kind of, he didn't mean no pie in the sky. There was no way in the world Dr. King believed that once we opened doors up for black people that they would not reach back and rebuild our community. And that's how he knew every ethnic group to come to this country, go anywhere, do that. And he said, we as a people will get to the promised land, because he saw the doors being open. He thought those who reap the benefits would give back. So always know when you hear that, that's what he meant. So it's 7 o'clock, it's a 7 o'clock hour. Wherever you are in the country, in the world, in the city, whether you're sitting down drinking coffee and tea with Dorothy Tillman, whether or not you're just standing up or riding around, it's time for you to take that deep breath, Ebony, Courtney, and wherever you are. If you're ready, take a deep breath. Black, 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 black. One more time, y'all. Black, 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 black. Oh, that felt so good. Why'd I tell y'all to do that every Saturday after Dr. King? Make you do it because you got to feel good to be black. Harold said, if you don't love yourself, you can't love nobody else. Some people scared to be black. Some folks scared to deal with anything, fairness, blackness, anything, progressive, anything. They don't want to deal with it. They're scared. And that's one of our problems right now. I'm excited because Harold Washington's name is back on the radar. Everybody's talking about him. The children last night did something with Harold. A whole month we've been doing things about Harold Washington. There was a great article in the paper. Ebony, we got to get David on the phone. There's a great article that was in the paper the other day. If she needs to come get the phone number, she can come get it from me. There was a great article in the paper the other day where David R. Ower wrote this editorial, an editorial page about Harold Washington on Wednesday. Here's Harold Trailblazing Mayor talk about how Harold was with fairness and what he did. And we've been talking about Harold Washington, too, all day, how he opened up government and what he did. Great mayor, a great man, and I'm trying to remember the order. Why Ebony getting David? I'm going to go to the phone. Get David. Ebony, come get David Orr's number. Yes, Minister Plump.
Well, yeah, shalom. Yes, good morning, Alderman. Black. How you feel today?
All the time. Got a lit up board, and I'm going to try to get David on. I'm doing fine. How you doing?
Oh, we are fantastically blessed. We just want to compliment you at this point, and also WDON for all of the patriotism that they've shown in the Honorable Mayor Harold Washington's way of life. We just want to share this thought that, you know, a few thoughts in particular that the Honorable Mayor Washington used to say at the beginning of his campaign, we must pump the whole community. And we're still, as they say, promoting the Harold Washington Foundation.com, and I can be reached at 312-671-2773. We got jobs for everybody in the red, black, and green, standing tall for us all, remembering that Mayor Washington was a way of life that shares success, breeds success, and a positive, progressive, and a professional personality that should always be remembered for freedom, justice, equality, and economics. And this is a good way that we can help to stop the violence, robbing, stealing, and killing, and save our children.
Okay, Minister Plump.
Children and Ray children.
Thank you,
yes,
Minister
ma'am.
Plump. And make sure that you read the article on David Orr in Sometime Wednesday.
Yes,
he did a great article.
Monday. Monday at the Harold Washington Culture Center.
Yes.
We'll be with Ed Gardner Tuesday at 11 o'clock.
I got to go, Minister Plump. I'll see you Monday, Minister
okay.
Plump. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yes,
I gotta go.
Ma'am. You will.
My whole board is lit up. It's been lit up all the morning. I got to figure out how to do this because I got to bring David in for a few minutes. I'm going to take one more call, then I'm going to bring David in and see. Joe, for me, what happened here? What are you doing? I can't open my phone. Joe from Maywood. Joe?
Hello?
Yes, Joe, turn your radio down. I'll come back to you, Joe. put you on hold. He got his radio on. I'll come back to him. Brother Chandler from the 24th Ward.
Yeah, hi, good morning, Alderman.
I'm fine. You want to talk about Harold Washington?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
I happened to be sitting in Bill Henry's office when the mayor called and told us that you needed help. And we had 120 captains.
Yeah.
60 captains, and each captain had a helper.
So y'all came
if
over there?
If you remember, we came over there, and we worked your wards for you.
I sure did. That's and when Harold Washington, for those who don't know, I think I was the only one that Harold Washington appointed alderman. Then I had to have a special election.
You were.
Then I had a special election, and you all, I always tell folks I was the people alderman because people came from everywhere to help get me in office, and I appreciate
it. And another thing, Alderman Tillman, I was around when the Silent Six was. I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to let you go. And you remember Tim Deckman? And then there were...
Well, Tim Deckman was with Daley. Yeah, I remember Tim Deckman. He was Daley's patriot person and
yeah,
over in the government. Uh-huh.
They call him the tap dancer.
Well, I don't know what they call him, but he was over
yeah,
he was in the government.
Called the tap dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought Tim Evans in.
Well, I don't know
Tim
about...
was in college then, going for his law degree.
Well, Brother Chandler, I got lit up thing, and I want to talk about the man,
I
the movement,
know,
and Harold.
I know, Alderman, but I just want you to know that he owed the Daley administration a favor because of what they did for him.
Well, okay. Well, I know that Tim Daley was with the Daley both administration. He was their person. Thank you, Brother Chandler. You keep listening, okay?
Oh, I always will.
Thank you. Love you. I'm going to go to David now because I really want to talk to him. And you keep y'all hang on. And my board is lit up, 773-591-1690. Our number is we are www.wvon.com. We are on iHeartRadio. We are on Facebook, Twitter, group Facebook, blackplanet.com. So, and you can 773-591-1690. This is Coffee, Tea, and a Conversation with me, Dorothy Wright Tillman, every Saturday from 6 to 8. Forgot to drop that in there. I was going straight back to the phone. But now I want to go to David for about 5 or 10 minutes to talk about his article. And, you know, David Orr was the vice mayor under Harold Washington. Loved David. Always have loved him, you know, because David was always working hard and telling someone to be in fairness, and he was there for Harold, working with Harold and working on behalf of the people. And you know he's been good in his position he's in now because he has worked hard and tried to do what he could do down there and just really working hard. I'm just proud to be associated with David Orr. David. David Orr, locking me in.
That's very nice. Thank you.
As you know, David, I really enjoyed working with you, and I think that you were there and you can give us perspective. I want to thank you for your article in Wednesday's paper, your letter that you wrote to the editor about Harold Washington, the trailblazer. I think you did an excellent
mm-hmm.
job. And I told the committee, all they got to do is look down what you wrote, and just based off of that, you laid it out. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I like you, always get concerned about how people look at history.
Yes.
And too often people ignore the real successes of his administration, and partly that's because, you know, people control the present, control the past. They kind of control... They tell young people, for example, how history might have been different. And so it is important what you and others have been doing this month to remember what really happened. And just because there was a political battle, that does not mean that reforms and improvements didn't take place.
Right.
This wasn't just an attractive personality. This was a guy who really wanted change. And, you know, in today's climate, you know, there's people in politics that really serve the status quo,
mm-hmm.
and there's those who want to change.
Mm-hmm.
And when you realize, when you want to change things, what you go up against, and that's what was kind of missing when people realized when Harold Washington took over, and Chicago's always been pretty corrupt, we all know that.
Yeah.
But when he took over, he had to change so much of the bureaucracy just to get the minimal things. And he went right to work on improving economic development and trying to find jobs for people because he knew the real problems then. Because
right.
he was serving the average person, not serving, as so many people have, the upper crust, so to speak.
Right.
And so
you know what, David, he also said, when Harold came in office, I tell people all the time, It wasn't just the black community was locked out. A whole wide, a whole group of people was locked up. So he opened up government for City of Chicago because City of Chicago was really on lockdown.
Yeah, it was, and it was all simple favoritism. One of the things that I liked about it was we actually had a short period in Chicago. We really had true democracy. People started registering in hundreds of thousands. They voted in higher numbers that we haven't seen since.
Mm-hmm.
They participated, like you said. You know, you and I know what CDBG, that's the Community Development Block Grants. Prior to Harold's time, there'd be all these important people appointed to committees. They'd meet, they'd make recommendations, and the mayors would just totally ignore them, whether mm-hmm. it was Old Man Daley or Jane Byrne or those before. Harold came in, that became lively debates. Well, how can we fix this? How can we do that?
Mm-hmm.
The people were listened to. There was real democracy, and it really made a difference.
And he used some of the CBDG grants to improve our community. And he also, this whole infrastructure program came about because of Harold.
And that was a fascinating battle. Because remember, it's in many ways kind of like what's going on with our president today and the Republicans saying, I'll do anything to wreck the country if it'll hurt him.
Right.
And at the time, the 29 did not want Harold to have any successes. It was a simple political game. He won in 83. They figured two white guys, well, in this case, a white woman, white man, Daley and Byrne, ran against each other. That's why Harold won. So hold off, be pretty vicious, and then we'll take him out 4 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And so they tried to stop all the policies. Harold knew that we had to have infrastructure, just like today. You know, government's got to spend.
Right.
It's good to spend, particularly on projects that help neighborhoods.
But also on those projects that black folks are working. It's sad when you come in our community and the project is going on, you see none of our people on those projects.
Well,
that's sad.
That's something that he fought. And, I noticed the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Even up my neighborhood, my wife's always out there looking to see what's on their license plates.
You
know, why are these people from Elk Grove coming in?
Right, 708.
Work in the
mm-hmm.
sewers or something. But, mm-hmm. he developed that very important infrastructure program to fix roads and schools and all sorts of things. And the 29 fought him, but he finally put that through. And that was one of the big victories at the time. And it not only got the city moving, but it proved his commitment to fairness and how the goodies were distributed, you know, fairly around the city.
And what about the executive order? Remember the executive order he signed for contracts? That how much percentage had to go to blacks and minority?
Well, that's one of the key things he worked on, because before there had been some talk of this, but what he really said is that there has to be a higher percentage of people who contract with the city that are minority-owned. That could be black, Latino, woman, okay? Cause there was
he said that it should reflect the population of the city.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to move that, but it wasn't just the fact of, like, passing the law, or in this case an executive order. It was a bureaucracy that was so deep in there that even when there was policies, the people that made the decisions, a lot of times, even though there was a policy to do this, they kept fighting from the inside all those years to try and prevent that movement from happening. So it made his work double trouble.
Yeah, but he worked hard. It was so systemic. Even on his boards that he put in place, I remember we had to introduce those ordinances and try to pull the boards that he had put in place to get them confirmed, and Vidodiak kept holding it back. But he was able to do a lot of things. But, you know, they used some of the engagement of the people, democracy. It was the first time since I've been in Chicago, I know for the black community, that the black elected officials felt accountable to their constituency, that they were scared to not work on behalf. And it got to be all across the city. But in our community, it was a first.
Yes, and it also, in doing that, it forced accountability, but it also showed what could be done.
Right.
You know, there's lots of elected officials, whether black or white or Latino or whatever, that, you know, don't really serve the public very well, and they don't necessarily want to see real change, the kind
mm-hmm.
of change that you've always fought for.
Mm-hmm.
So the little guy gets represented in government, not
right.
just the few. And so even at that time, many of the folks who maybe were a little more traditional, they were forced to come along. They were forced to support these things. And, you know, so it really was a time in which these ideas and improvements in trying to, you know, treat neighborhoods more fairly and to jumpstart the economy, particularly in poor neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
That was all happening. And many of the aldermen, I think, got excited by it.
Right. You know, when Harold went in, because, you know, Harold came in with the movement. That's why they call it the movement, the
That's
moment,
right.
the man. Now, you know, before we started our movement, there was no Latina. I always tell folks, we didn't say Spanish, said Latina. The Latina people in that was Latino, they had no Latina representation. And remember, the first one was a Stenberg. We went after Stenberg. You remember Stenberg in the 22nd War?
Yes, I do.
Oh, he was something else. And people keep forgetting that Rudy Lozano was running for that seat, and he was murdered. And
That's right.
And I don't like to let folks forget Rudy Lozano. He was murdered because he was part of this movement that was sweeping Harold in. And then Garcia, who was his campaign manager, then stepped in after they murdered him. So we got him in. And if you remember, Gutierrez was really losing until Harold came and told us to go over in that ward. And he said, look, Tillman, bring me back Gutierrez. And we went over there with Slim and Helen, and but we took their organization came in, and our organization, the third ward, and we touched every black voter in that ward, and that's how Gutierrez won, because of Harold Washington sending us over there.
That's right. That's a very good example of a member. That's going back to 1986, after the majority had passed a racist map early in 1980s, like they kind of do each year, and it finally went through court, and the courts agreed that the map was racist and unfair.
Right.
And so we had these special elections, and because of, well, Harold's leadership and people like you and thousands of volunteers, I remember being out there myself.
Yes, you were out there.
In those seven wards,
uh-huh.
seven wards up for grabs, and Harold's side won four of the seven, which brought in, you know, Chuy Garcia and Luis Gutierrez.
And Marlene Carter.
That's right. So by winning four, remember that
mm-hmm.
meant that city council, instead of 29-21, was 25-25, and Harold could actually break ties now. So that was the first time he actually had control, and that was 3 years after he was first elected.
Right, and that lets you know, David, and I might keep you on a little while longer to see some of the people might want to talk to you, but, you know, what that says to me, David, is that, and the clerk, oh, I'm not being disrespectful.
Yes, quite.
By not calling you clerk.
That's all right, Dorothy.
Okay, but by that power, all the power is to the people, and if they exercise that power, and they begin, even now, you know, we elect people and they just walk away. Harold showed that you can make a difference. We can make a difference when we elect someone.
That's right, absolutely.
Right.
It was a remarkable achievement because of that registration. All those people who fought to build the infrastructure, which in this case was people registering and understanding why it could be important, and then going out and voting.
Right.
And then they had the victory, and then they realized, sometimes people don't do that. They go and vote, but then they sit back.
Right.
With Harold, they had the victory, but as soon as he stepped into his first city council meeting and the 29 took over, those supporters of Harold realized, hey, we're in for a real battle. We can't sit back now just because
right.
we voted.
Right.
And that was the other part of democratic process, that people participated. They came out. It was just amazing. In fact, Harold Washington probably did more to educate, well, a lot of people, but particularly African-American community, than anyone I can think of.
Yes,
because they paid attention to the news. Said,
yeah.
Wait a second. What's Fredoliak trying to do to Harold today? We got to fight that.
Well, one of the things, we had made our community conscious and come alive, and that's one of the bad things about tearing down all these developments across the city, because the economic, the political empowerment that was in those places. But,
mm-hmm.
Dave, you know, one other thing, and then I got to play march this power to the people, then I'm going to go to the board.
Okay.
But one thing is that we used to get together and at least talk about what we needed to do, and we moved out on those things. We would meet, and we would say, okay, this is what we got to do. I'm not so sure people are doing that anymore, looking at what's best for our communities and meeting and doing that. But we did that. We knew what we had to do and what we had to fight and support.
That's right. And those were tough meetings, and it ought to be tough meetings. Because,
right.
You know, like I said, I mean, it really
Oh, yeah, they were tough.
Yeah. You know, what government does, of course, is so important to me today. What government does is so important because, you know, corporations, you know, good ones here and there, but by and large, their job is not to help spread the wealth. Their job is to take the goodies.
Right.
And so it was very important when government steps in, says, how can we best help people? How can we build those jobs, build the infrastructure? And we fought about that stuff, and, I mean, discussed it and thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
And and one of the things that we have to remember, Harold was not only the first African American elected, but you know he wanted this change. You know, he
right.
was a reformer. He was not going to settle and just say, okay, well now we'll have a black machine instead of a white machine.
Right. He didn't do the Jane Byrne on it, but Jane Byrne became a part of the cabal.
That's right.
Right.
But that's why it was so difficult for him, because he knew he couldn't really bring progress to the neighborhoods and help people and have the little guy really get something out of government if he didn't change all the structural corruption and inside deals that were going on all the time.
Institutional corruption, he called it.
Exactly, and that's exactly what it was. Unfortunately, we still got a lot of it.
Right. You know, well, one of the things about Harold with him, when he said, "I stepped on a grave," Patrick is dead. I think he didn't realize this sucker had a stick on there getting to the air. So I'm going to play this song, and I'm going to go to the board. What David is talking about, what Marsha and Shalice talked about, for God's sake, we got to give more power to the people. Got to give more power to the people. That's what David and I are talking about right now, power to the people. And that's what we're going to be demonstrating on Monday. You got to come and see. We're going to be really showing. We got footage of Harold we're going to be showing. It's not just a concert. Marsha's going to do a song and dedicate it to Harold. But we're going to be showing a lot of little stuff and have people like David and that committee there. We're going to be talking about trying. I mean, it's exemplifying giving more power to the people. David, I'm going to go to some calls and see what some people might have to say, okay?
Okay.
Taylor, how you doing this morning?
Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
I want to say that I will be out there with you also.
Thank you.
Dorothy.
Thank you.
If it wasn't for you, I guess the rest of them going to sleep.
Lord have mercy.
And
we got David.
You know, I was just telling Emmy, you know, we went to DePaul together.
Uh-huh.
That I got on Facebook, and honey, it was tickling me. Some of the people, I'm glad I didn't put my picture there, some of the people I could see that just, They want everything, all kind of issues,
uh-huh,
to divert us from being black. They're so afraid.
Well, one thing Harold said, Taylor, was to be black and to love your people don't mean you have to hate anybody else.
Exactly.
But you can't love nobody if you don't love yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. You didn't want me. I'm not going. I want to deal with issues that's dealing with us.
Okay. Well, then we got to do that. I'll see you Monday, Taylor.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Harold always said it, didn't he, David? You can't. To love black people don't mean you hate anybody else.
That's right. If you believe in a fairness or equality, then you support everybody.
Right. Charles, how you doing?
Good morning,
Charles. Yes, you want to talk to David or?
Yes, I will. Good morning to you, Miss Dorothy. Tell
good morning.
I love you. I love you.
I love you too, darling.
I will be there with the Harold Washington Movement. He was the godfather of the city of Chicago. I love that man to life, and I love him, and he will always be in my heart as well as my family heart and everyone else that I know.
Okay, thanks.
And also, I would like to say, let's don't forget Ronald Reagan. Let's pray for his soul burn in hell and enjoy your day. Goodbye.
I'm not going to respond to that last part. David, you want to say something, you can.
Well, I think when people are always trying to resurrect history, you just mentioned Ronald Reagan, as people should remember, this is the guy who was extremely antagonistic toward black people throughout his entire administration.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always forgotten, unfortunately, when people write the history. So it's important that people remember. He not only was a very conservative guy, but he also was very anti-black.
And Harold was in the Congress before he came, and that was one of the fights. That was one of his dilemma about accepting running for mayor is that he didn't know whether to come and run for mayor or stay there and fight the evils of Ronald Reagan.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you so much, Charles. Michael.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Michael. How you doing?
Hi, I'm doing fine. You know, when I woke up this morning, I'm on my way to work, and I heard the conversation. I said, I got to call in.
Thank you.
I remember the names such as people like Bill Ware, Betsy
mm-hmm.
Berry, William B. L. Raby.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I worked under Zenobia Black in the volunteer coordinating office in the Maddox building under Hal Washington. I was a staff, but I was, you know, I was a volunteer.
Yeah, Al Raby.
Yeah,
Al Raby. Let folks know who Al Raby was, his campaign manager.
Yes, he was.
Mm-hmm.
I remember you in that leopard coat when you were coming down there to get your money from Hope Mueller and the gang.
Hope,
so
get money.
Get your resource. Yeah, remember when you were running and they were supposed to be helping you to run? And see, what people don't realize, they romanticize about Hal Washington's campaign, but Hal was broke before the primary.
People don't understand. You're absolutely right about Harold being broke for the primary. In fact, the Parent Equalizers of Chicago, we had an office on Van Buren right next to Running Steakhouse.
Sure,
and Harold could not get an office downtown for the primary. And that was one of the reasons the Parent Equalizers, more or less, we kind of broke up, because most of the Parent Equalizers wanted Harold to have it, and then some wanted to keep on with our struggle. But we had to give the Parent Equalizer's office up to Harold to run his primary so he could have an office downtown. And most folks don't realize
that,
David.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We were in the Modoc building. It was three campaigns in the Modoc building. Vidoliak, I remember them doing sweeps in our office because of all of the craziness that they were doing to us. I remember thousands of people who were jailed the night before the primary.
Right, Jane Byrne was taking people up off of the street and putting them in jail, stopping the trains from running and everything.
I remember that. I remember I was a young man. I remember Joe Carter, who did the logistics for the transportation for Election Day, and what happened to him. So,
Campaign. It wasn't easy, Michael. It was such that we all had to get together and work.
Our freedom ain't never been free. And you asked the question in terms of the issue for your subject matter, and you ask what was it we needed to do. I think that what we need to do is to do the type of education that we did back then. See, then a lot of people don't even remember. The fact of the matter is, Hal did not have the established church, black church leadership.
No, it was all with Jane Byrne.
Yeah, it was all with Jane Byrne. But it was people who were tired of being underemployed or unemployed, who were tired of bad schools, who were tired of police brutality, who were tired of all of the isms that kept us from being one city. And quite frankly, we have not been the same since.
Thank you.
That's my comment.
Thank you. David, you want to respond to that?
Michael's very articulate, and he just pointed out what Harold had it going against him, including, like you say, not only the old machine and all the power structure, lack of funds, but you add to it, in many cases, many of the leadership, particularly the black community around churches.
Right.
A lot of times when people are trying to serve the constituents, they have very little.
Mm-hmm.
So tempting to go with those who have power. And because they're afraid that if they go against the power, that then they will get discriminated against, which they unfortunately will.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to build a whole new, broader movement, and education is critical. People have to understand it can be done again if people do it right and not settle for the crumbs.
Right. Because, Dave, you know, during that time, Jane Byrne was giving people hams and checks, some of the so-called progressive ones. Jane Byrne was giving these churches in the black community hams and money and churches, and what happened, and this is really funny, Dave, it's so good talking to you, is that the parishioners stopped putting money in the basket. The churches began to see an empty basket.
They took things in their own hands, which they needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, that all that power we talked about, you know, it was in the administration's hand. This was Jane Byrne as mayor.
Right.
So there's a lot that you can give, like I say, little goodies and little grants and so forth to maybe help the church and help the local school or help the daycare. But unfortunately, a lot of people in power use that to force leaders to go along with the status quo, which might give a little bit to their church but doesn't help the real community.
Right. And that's, you know what, Dave, it's interesting. We have a really – in our community – I tell folks all the time, poverty and violence, someone is making money off of that.
Absolutely.
And that's why they want to push the negative about that rather than trying to solve the problem because you've got a handful. But those people took that money instead of putting it in the baskets of the churches and brought it to Harold Washington campaign.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing I want to say in talking about the money, and it's very important to say this, people say, we want all these Arab stores out of our community. Well, those that's not doing right, any store should be gone. But I remember that the Swices, I remember this, from 43rd up to 55th Street and Tatros on State Street, they came together. When we were really down with some, we were needing to print some, needed some money so bad, and we couldn't even get money from black, some of our own businesses who were scared to do something. They put together a bag of money because I went with Jackie get the, and deliver that money to Jackie so that we could keep going. Had it not been for the Swices from 43rd, they were from 43rd all the way down to 55th Street up under the L. And how they had a little, they had a dinner and Tatro and all of them, and they raised money for Harold. And that's what Dr. King mean about character, rather than you can't just take a broad brush and paint people. They said, we want them out of our community. I said, well, if some of them had not been here when Harold was running, you might not have got a black mayor.
That's absolutely right.
You know, well, let me talk to Ms. Johnson. Ms. Johnson, how you doing?
Wonderful, Ms. Tillman. How are you?
I'm fine.
Yeah, I haven't called you in quite a while.
That's
but,
all right.
But I always listen, you know, to your show.
Yes, ma'am.
And I just want to say to you that I didn't know that was your daughter, so we just had a nice
couple. Oh, you mean my producer, Ebony Tillman. Ebony Tillman. Yeah, that's my other. That's my oldest daughter.
Right, right. I know I have heard Kamalisa, you know.
Jim Alita.
Right.
Well, you know, Ms. Johnson, Ebony is the one that I tell her, Ebony is the one that did all my research in Congress for the whole reparations and all the other stuff. She's my researcher, my writer, very brilliant little girl. Y'all
just
see the baby.
Yes. I just enjoyed talking to her so much.
Okay.
And I just want to give you a compliment on what a nice family you have.
Thank you.
And, you know, and I want to say to you that you're doing a great job, Ms. Tillman.
Thank you.
So, you know, I just want to say these words, you know, for consolation. We just have to, the ones who believe in the right thing, we just have to do the best that we can and leave the rest to the higher power.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
And he will take care of things, you know, in his own time, okay?
Okay, and you know what he say? What they said, faith without work is what?
Is dead.
That's right. We got to work. Thank you, Ms. Jeff.
And you know, what he says is true. Do you see, I know, you know, that you got to notice it and everybody else should notice it. Do you see how that God is letting people know that he is tired of their wrongdoing?
Well, let me tell you something. My board is lit up and I need to go on, but just know that God said, the Bible said, faith without work is useless. So we got to work.
That's right.
And we got to work and go out in his name and work, and we can change things. Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Oh, okay, dear. So may God bless you.
God bless you, too. One of the things is that, David, is that and within our culture, and sometimes the power that our leadership have over people, they said, don't worry. God's going to work it out. Just sit by and wait. And they can be sitting all day long, and their walls won't even get painted. And they never go to the part about without the work.
That's right.
You
got
to
right.
work. I mean, you want change. Change come because you work, and we did work. One of the other things you talked about in this article, David, I love this article. Your wife told me, one of your staff person, not your wife, your staff person told me that they cut the article up, and I sure want to get the whole article because I'm going to put it on my, if you can email it to me, I want to put it on my website. I have a huge website.
I think we had 14 versions. You know, we'd write this, we'd add this, we'd take this out. But you have to keep it short. There's so much more you'd like to do, but for a little newspaper thing, you have to cut a lot out.
Well, for this one right here, this version, I got to figure out how I'm going to put it on my website because I have a huge web. I have a huge network out there. I have an international network, really, so
that's
I want
right.
to make sure
well,
that.
It's a good way to do it nowadays because, the main media doesn't always cover these kinds of things, so people can do their own stuff. That's good.
Right, and I want you to know, David, that we appreciate you. Because you have been consistent, you have not wavered, you have been on the case, you have stayed consistent from the day that I met you and we began to fight for change. Even as clerk, you have been very fair and consistent. You have not allowed the environment to change you and that you are not a chameleon, and we thank you for that. I would just want to say that.
Well, thanks a lot. It's really not hard if you're if you know what your focus is. If your focus is trying to good job for the people and not looking to enrich yourself, then it's really not so hard to be steady.
Hold on, let me get Reverend Weatherspoon. Reverend Weatherspoon, what about these preachers right here selling us out?
Oh yes. It's sad. That's the problem we have. We can't get them to come together and come with a vision because they're selling out.
Well, we got to get on the case there, Reverend Weatherspoon.
Keep praying, keep working the vision that Harold Washington set before, and we'll make a difference in the city.
Yes. How's it going on that west side over there, Reverend Weatherspoon?
Well, we're trying to maintain and hold down over here because there's a lot of work to be done over here, but we got some good leaders over here, good people over there, Danny Davis, Chairman Danny Davis. We got some good people over here.
Okay, thank you, Reverend Weatherspoon. You had anything else? Because I got to go to the next caller. He's gone. Good. Okay, thank you. Sabrina?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, how you doing? I saw the Facebook post, and I had just mentioned that my fondest memory of Harold Washington was the late activist Marion Stamps.
Yes, my sister.
Yes. When I worked for her as a teenager, she gave me my first job, first of all, but she took a group of us to see him and how he was just so easily and treatable and, you know, so up close and personal.
Yes.
And, you know, what baffles me, and I'm still angry to this day, is that, you know, his death was never investigated the way it should. It's like it was just, you know, swept under the rug. But that was my fondest memory of him, that he was easy to talk to, he was real personable, and how nowadays, you know, these politicians are like rock stars. You know, you can't touch them with a 10-foot pole, and to me, you know, they don't do anything but, you know, for those of it, you know, in their inner circle.
Well, I say this, Sabrina, I tell all elected officials, and I tell people, if I can run up on you when I'm running, I should run up on you when I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Sabrina.
Okay.
Dave, you have anything to say about that? Should I go to the next caller?
Yeah, I remember Marion Stamps was a fighter, and Sabrina's right, but sometimes our elected officials are maybe as good as we make them.
Right.
I mean, Harold was an exceptional talent, very bright, et cetera. But, again, he couldn't have gotten where he had without that great grassroots registration and voting.
Right.
So it really goes together. You can have great leaders, and sometimes you don't support them, or you can make great leaders by what you do in the streets and what you do to organize.
Right. You know, one thing about the registration people forget is that when we put together Power with Nancy Jefferson, Slim Coleman, myself, and all of us,
mm-hmm.
and we went and we, what was it? Chairman LaVelle. You remember LaVelle?
Yes.
We went and we wanted to get to register people at the welfare office, the currency exchange, and we wanted to register people at where you get your driving license, and he gave us a hard time. And so we were able to negotiate with him, well, just let us just do the welfare office. And this is before deputy registration was going on.
And he
put all of these things. Yeah, you got to have a van, you got to have a table, you got to have chairs. And I said, oh, Mr. LaVelle, we can't. That's really rough. We were just playing. I winked at Slim. He said, well, if you can't do that, you can't have. We'll start out in the welfare office. And then we were responsible for the one on Rich Street. And we, all over the city, we began to register people. And they saw that it was getting so successful, they came around and tried to shut us down. Now, Jane Byrne got really mad. She blamed Chairman LaVelle for allowing for her loss because of that. And then later on we got Come Alive October 5 by Mr. Garden, and all of that was the People's Movement.
Well, it's a good example, too, because people need to understand Power. And like I say, they paid much more attention when Harold was alive. But everything, you're now referring to the chairman of the Board of Elections, that everything people tried to do to bring about change, there was an obstacle.
Now,
right. It was making it harder to register. Okay. And so that had to be overcome even before you were able to do all that. So that's why, unfortunately, some people give up, because there's so many impediments when
right.
you try and bring about change. I mean, the Latino movement in the last 20, 30 years, you know, for a while in certain places, you know, they were arresting people for registering to vote, just like
right.
the Old South. But gradually people overcome those hurdles, and then they can make some real progress.
Or they kill people like they did Rudy Lozano. What you doing over there in that movement? I always remember how they murdered Rudy Lozano, because he was very strong. He had a very strong position and understood that coalition, and he was working hard. And they shot this man in the presence of his children. We should not forget that. I don't ever like to forget Rudy Lozano.
Right, because he was a very articulate young leader with a great future, and unfortunately, we never got to see it. So.
Yeah, he murdered with being nice, letting someone come in to use the bathroom. They set him up. Corey, you want to talk to Clerk Orr? Corey?
Yeah, good morning.
Remap fight then and now?
Yeah, I just want to ask you a question about the war remap. The one that Emmanuel's trying to stop and everything. I just want to ask your opinion about that. What do you think about that?
David, you want to answer that?
Okay, since I'm out of the council, I know less. I know that the side bringing the suit argues that by law that aldermen got elected just a couple of years ago to serve a particular district, and therefore they should keep serving that district, whereas the present administration has now given the go-ahead for the aldermen to switch to the new district. And that's going to be a legal battle, and I think those who want to change it, Tom Gagin, who's a great lawyer, and he was a good friend of Harold Washington, and he fought for the steelworkers. I think he's the leading lawyer for the League of Women Voters in trying to force all of them to represent the districts they were elected in. So that's the battleground, let's see where they see where.
And one of the other things they were saying that the numbers are not equal. They just kind of took the numbers and moved them around. You're supposed to divide it up equally.
Yeah. How exact do you have to be?
Mm-hmm.
And so both things are coming out. I guess it was a Today's paper yesterday. The Emanuel administration saying they want to dismiss it because I think in this case they're saying the League of Women Voters wouldn't have standing. So they go through a lot of technicalities. But that's the two key questions just we said. One, do the numbers really have to be equal or really close to being equal? And secondly, should the aldermen keep representing for a longer time the wards that elected them?
And the difference, he has questions fight nine then. Then it was, it took a long time to win that battle. That's how Harold got 25-25, Corey. Thank you so much. Manny, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing all right, Alderman Tillman. Yeah, that's one thing I could agree with you. Majority of these black pastors are sellouts, and that's what I said on the Matt McGill show. I was polarizing all pastors.
There's a group of progressive pastors who got together and even marched for these schools. So you got some who are fighting just like we had, and you got some who are not. And the question is up to the – just like it's up to us to deal with the political part, is also – I go to church every Sunday, and I'm always challenging my pastor, so it's up to us to challenge our pastors, too, to do what's right for the congregation.
Right. Thank you, Alderman Selman, we need to rise up against this Rahm Emanuel and this Anita Alvarez. We need to get Karen Lewis in office.
Well, all power belongs to the people, and up to the people to decide who they want. Thank you, Manny. It's all power to the people. You know, this has just been so wonderful. I've enjoyed you, David. We got to do this again.
What?
We have to, just for political education, just to educate, just to talk to people so they can know and believe and that it can happen what we have to do.
Yeah, it's a little bit, you know, we all want to kind of reflect on that time and whether we're very young or not. At the same time, education is so important, so people don't have this mythical belief. It's kind of like, you know, Martin Luther King, how people, everybody praises him now. Well,
like he had a dream, huh?
The traitor, the FBI was spying on him.
Right.
You got to realize that when there are powerful, popular people that really bring about change, history wants to turn them into, weren't they just, you know, regular guys, and they really weren't for that kind of change. And
right.
We got to remind people, if you want change, you got to be tough, and you got to fight the existing system. And this wouldn't have happened without the thousands, the tens of thousands of people. That's what's so nice about this month. You remember, you had a great leader, Harold Washington, but there were so many people, from people on the street to people who just called in your show, people in his administration, so many people working together, and that's why I think they made a difference for, unfortunately, too short a time.
And so I'll see you on Monday. I understand you're going to have a little gift you're going to be giving out to people?
Is that right?
I don't know. Somebody told me you might be. I don't. I better wait and see.
I guess
okay.
I'm better. Okay.
I gotta see. I don't know about Jim Leather was telling me something. Anyway, I'll see you on Monday, David. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dorothy.
Thank you, David. Okay, Courtney. Thanks, Dave. Thank you, David, so much. This has really been a wonderful show. And let me just tell you, Artist Blues Boy White funeral is today at the New Faith Baptist Church, 8400 South Halsted, from 10 to noon, 10 to 11 to wait. 11 at noon is the funeral. That's Artie Blues Boy White funeral today at New Faith Baptist Church. So make sure that those who love blues like I do, that you make sure that you be there. Next week I'll play some music of Artie Blues Boy White. Once again, the Harold Washington Culture Center on Monday. Doors open at 6. The program starts at 7. VON have a special, two people for $30, one for $20. This event is being put on by the Harold Washington Tribute Committee. The Black United Fund is their funding agency. People ask you, so I guess you need the right to check the Black United Fund or the Harold Washington Tribute Committee. And we are happy that they chose our venue to host the final of leg of what they have done throughout the whole month. They've been all over the place. Last night it was at DuSaba High School. Tomorrow we'll be at the museum, and they're going to come to the Harold Washington Culture Center. Very befitting. So you all come on out. We're going to be showing pictures of Harold. If you want to show your memorabilia, you bring them on. And you're going to be in for a treat so that we can remember Harold Washington, as David Orr said. Go to the Tribune, go to the Sun-Times on Wednesday and read the editorial, who Harold was. And it might give you some backbone to begin to fight. Evan has just told me it's on my Facebook page if you want to look at it. But give you some backbone to fight. Power belongs to you. It was the first time in the history of this city that I saw black folks fighting for their future. And I don't know whether I have just a little bitty time to play Young, Gifted, and Black by not even tomorrow, but done halfway. Do I have time to play a little of that? Because it's all about our children and about our future. They telling kids, you can't wake up and give, you got to get children home. It's for our future. It's not just about the other stuff. And the majority of our folks are young, gifted, and black. And they're not all of them young, gifted, and black. But none of all of our people are not engaged in the stuff that people have you here. This, I have to play something to uplift our community and our young people. Those young people on the West Side listening to me this morning, this is to you. Young folks in the Harold Washington Culture Center throughout the city, throughout the country. So this is for you before I leave. We're going to fight for you, for our future. Just a few minutes, a few seconds of it, and I'm going to come back, and we're going to get ready to go out of here. For our children, for us to understand, it's about our future. We must get involved. Do not take your eye off the ball of the education. And next week, we're going to be talking about, be thinking about economic, political, and violence that's on our community. I think that we are getting wiped out all kind of ways. And you can't let those who are making it off the backs of poverty say, we keep hollering about the violence of the people who are gain political and educational from our struggle and not put back. So we're just being inundated by all kind of stuff, but we're going to be all right because we're going to stand up and fight. I think how many minutes I got over there. We're going to be all right because we're going to stand up and fight, and I want to thank David Orr for being on the show. I want to see y'all tomorrow, Monday, at the Harold Washington Culture Center, tomorrow at DuSaba Museum, and also Artie Blue's Boy White Funeral, which I got to go home and get ready for on 84th and Halsted. Make sure that you come. This is, I'll be at the DuSaba Museum tomorrow talking about Harold Washington. At what time, Ebony? So call DuSaba and tell me what, at 2 o'clock, we're going to be remembering Harold. So come on by, y'all, and then come on by Monday and support the Harold Washington Tribute Committee. This is Dorothy Wright Tillman here every Saturday morning from 6 to 8. with Coffee, Tea, and a Conversation with Me. If you missed this today or you missed it all, go to Jimmy Lee Underground Network and find me on Blog Talk. That's my son's network, y'all, Jimmy Lee. But I bought some time on his network so I could have Blog Talk. Him and Ebony got me on there. Go to Jimmy Lee Underground Network to hear the show. Until then, y'all, those who I don't see at the funeral, those who I don't see on Monday, reparations now, and I'll see you next Saturday.
Thank you, Jesus.